Craft Beer Radio, Episode 2.
Welcome to Craft Beer Radio, the show about craft beer and the craft brewing industry. I'm Greg Weiss.
And this is Jeff Baer.
Today we're going to be covering Pilsners, the Pilsner lager style. We're going to be talking about three beers from this group. We're going to also tell you how you can help us with the show. But first, cover a few emails and news we received.
First email is from George from Portland. He went on to say that he really enjoyed the show. He liked how we told how the different styles of beer were made. Liked the history background. So
I liked it too.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're gaming at on this. You know, a little more, one of the more educational podcasts that you can find, at least while drinking beer.
That's our goal, at least, is to try to educate, inform, and entertain all at the same time.
He had a question. He didn't quite understand the differences in the stages of fermentation that were anaerobic and aerobic.
Well, let's discuss them now and see if we can clear up any problems that we had with her last time.
Sure. Yeah, I emailed George and explained it to him, but there might be other people with questions out there. Let me just explain that part, and hopefully everyone who had questions, they will be answered. When you pitch the yeast into the wort, the first stage that happens is the aerobic stage, and this is where the yeast absorb the oxygen, and they multiply.
Okay.
And that's pretty much the end of the aerobic stage. The more oxygen you have in the beer, the more the yeast are able to multiply, so that's why it's important to get a lot of oxygen into it. The part about injecting the pure oxygen, the O2 molecules, all brewers do that. They all inject oxygen. But home brewers will shake or stir because they don't all have stainless steel oxygen stones and regulators to do that. So that was the part about injecting. But all pro brewers inject pure oxygen into their beer.
What stage was first?
The aerobic stage.
The aerobic stage. Now, I remember Louis Pasteur said that fermentation was what happens when there's no more oxygen. So essentially, there's the aerobic stage first, when the yeast are multiplying, taking up all the oxygen, and then when there's no more oxygen left, that's when they just start pumping out. They start changing the sugars into the carbon dioxide and the alcohol.
Exactly. That's the anaerobic stage. Anaerobic means without oxygen, and that's where they've done multiplying. Now they're going to do their job of converting the sugars into the alcohol and the CO2 and ferment the wort into beer.
There you go.
All right. So next, we're getting into some beer news. A few things happened in the beer industry this week. Ratebeer.com put out their list of the best brewers and beers in the world.
What did they come up with? I'm curious about this, too.
This list is very United States-centric. I would say probably a little too much.
But I imagine most of Ratebeer's clientele are in the United States anyway, so it's probably part of where they came up with it.
Right. Number one is Alesmith Brewing Company in San Diego. I haven't had any Alesmith beer. You have to pretty much be in the city to get their stuff, I believe.
Okay.
Number two is Three Floyds Brewing Company out of Munster, Indiana. Right down the street from Jeffrey from the Good Beer Show, so he gets to enjoy those beers.
Lucky him.
I've only had one of their beers because they're kind of hard to find here in Pittsburgh. I've had their Alpha King IPA, and I have one of their Dreadnoughts in the cellar downstairs. I haven't had that one yet.
I definitely should try them out. I haven't had any of these beers so far.
One of their highest demanding beers is their Dark Lord Imperial Stout. Very limited edition, and pretty much you have to be at the brewery the day they put it out and know the secret handshake to get these things. I mean, they're almost impossible to get.
I do love a good Imperial Stout.
The third brewery is Stone Brewing Company.
Ah, Stone Brewing Company.
Out of San Marcos, which is near San Diego, I believe. They're famous for their Arrogant Bastard Ale.
Right.
And they make a bunch of big, flavorful beers, always in your face, and they make some tremendous beer. Number four brings in our first international.
Good packaging, by the way, on the Stone stuff.
Yes. It's always worth the read, reading your Stone's label. Number four is our first international entry. It's Westveldtren from Belgium.
Now, Belgian beers, I can understand that.
They're a very highly rated Belgian brewery. I've never had any beers from them because they're very hard to find. They're almost one of those things that are highly rated because you can't get them. I'm not saying they're not great, but I'm sure their demand makes their rating go up some.
I mean, sometimes it can be hard to find Belgian beers. We actually have a pretty good place here in Pittsburgh called the Sharp Edge where you can get Belgian beers, but your city may not have it, unfortunately. And you should really, if you get the chance, try out Belgian beers because it's like a whole other class of beers.
Sure. The next couple are smaller breweries that I haven't had. I'll name them because, well, the next one is in Portland, and I know we have at least one listener from Portland, George. Hair of the Dog Brewing Company came in fifth. De Dool Brouwers from Belgium came in sixth. And now I'm going to start skipping to ones that you'll be able to seek out and find pretty much wherever you are in the country. Kalamazoo Brewing Company, they're the maker of Bell's Beers.
Okay.
Is number 7. And they make some tremendous beers. Their Expedition Stout's one of my favorite Imperial Stouts.
It's a good one.
Number 9 was Dogfish Head. And if you've been listening to our podcast, you know all about Dogfish Head already.
We like Dogfish Head a lot.
They're from Delaware. Number 14 is Victory Brewing Company.
I think it's local around here in
Pennsylvania. If you're on the East Coast, you can get them, I think, pretty good. But if you're out West, they're a little bit harder to find. They're one of the breweries we're tasting tonight. Rogue Ales comes in at number 18. You can get them pretty much everywhere. They make good beers, and they're very popular.
They also make beers for Chef Morimoto's Philadelphia restaurant.
Yes.
They make a lot of custom beers for custom restaurants.
Yes, they do. The Morimoto is a special beer. Some of their other beers that they make for restaurants are just repackaged of their normal amber or their normal something. Fatheads here in Pittsburgh has a Rogue beer. Theirs isn't one of their normal packaged beers. I forget which one it is. It's a seasonal that they did under another name. But I was reading an article where there's a restaurant in New Orleans. They did some kind of jazz beer.
Oh.
And it turns out it's just their amber ale.
Oh, I see. Well, I think Fatheads is a strong ale. And I guess they may have done that at some point and then just decided, here, we'll give you this beer.
Yeah.
Which is good for us, being in Pittsburgh, getting a chance to have it.
The two other breweries we're tasting tonight are Stouts and Trogues. They're 24 and 26 on the list, respectively. And for two smaller Pennsylvania breweries.
It's pretty good.
Those are pretty good listings. Scrolling down the list, Great Lakes beats out Cantillion, which is interesting. Great Lakes Brewing is in Cleveland, and they make some great beers.
I love Great Lakes.
Cantillion, though, is a world-class Belgian lambic brewery, and I'm just surprised to see that shifted out that way on this site.
I think, like you say, a little bit of the U.S. bias maybe gets in there. Although, I mean, I believe that Great Lakes makes some world-class beers of their own. In particular, the Edmund Fitzgerald Porter, which is a fantastic beer.
Still the best porter I've had.
Absolutely.
Edmund Fitzgerald Porter.
I agree.
So you need to seek that one out. We're going to taste it someday in the fall when we can get into the darker beers. Greg and I both like stouts and porters and whatnot. We just feel that being the beginning of summer, not really the ideal time to taste it. We're going to try to stay traditional with the styles of beers that are drunk in the seasons that we're in.
Right. We're going to try to work with what's really going to be available and what's really going to taste well at this time of year.
Sure. And when we get to coming up on Christmas time, it's beer holiday for us. I mean, that's when all my favorite seasonals come out, the wintertime. Okay, the next item on our news, this is a little bit of a fun one. We were talking about the big brewers and advertising last week. Miller is intensifying their summer marketing campaign.
And oh, goody.
In particular, they're going to start bashing Bud Light again. So that's kind of bad because their I Can't Taste My Beer commercials are entertaining.
They are entertaining.
And they're highly hypocritical, but they're entertaining.
They're very entertaining. They have some great ad campaigns there. And we, like we said last time, we do like advertising. So it's always good to see that. But apparently they're changing their tune.
Yeah. I mean, they must figure bashing Bud Light is more profitable than having fun commercials.
And that's the thing you got to remember about macros is they're really concerned much more about profit, much more about selling the idea more than they are about crafting a good beer.
Hey, since the Miller commercials, the I Can't Taste My Beers are probably going off the air, you want to talk about that one that we just saw on TV?
Sure, let's discuss. This is a really good commercial that we saw where these guys are at their own baseball game. They're sort of a softball game or whatever it is, and all of a sudden it starts raining. And the guy licks the air, you know, gets a couple raindrops in his mouth and says, "This tastes like beer."
And then they cut away and there's like people outside the ball field and they hear this and they, like, start tasting the air, the rain's falling in their mouth, and this tastes like beer. And it just degrades from there. There's guys licking water off cars. This tastes like beer. There's guys drinking out of water, rain puddles.
Right. And they're like, "Oh my God, this all tastes like beer. This tastes like beer. This is great." And they run to a bar where people are drinking Miller. Here's the hypocritical part, but anyway, people are drinking Miller inside the bar and they look in and they yell, it's raining beer outside, beer outside. And the people who are drinking Miller, which, according to this commercial, is very dark and tasty, but whatever. The people who are drinking Miller look at them, like, quizzically, like, "What are you talking about?" And then I think the catchphrase is, "Shouldn't your beer taste more like beer?"
Right. And they've had several commercials. They've had the one where everyone's at the keg party and they're all dancing around with empty glasses and they're all pretending to drink it and enjoy it and whatnot. But this Rain Tastes Like Beer one was hilarious. I had it on my TV. I rewinded it and watched it like 4 times in a row because it was just such a great commercial.
It's a great idea because basically, if you ask me, a lot of those light beers do basically taste like water. So it really fits.
Okay, the next news item. This one's really interesting if you live in New York State or anywhere near the Northeast. They're working on putting together a beer trail. They already have a wine trail. It's kind of a driving tour where you can go check out selected New York wineries, and it's great for tourism.
Uh-huh.
Well, they want to do the same thing for breweries.
Sounds fun.
And the two of the breweries mentioned in the article were Omegang and Brooklyn.
Very good breweries.
Other ones will be mentioned, like Southern Tier, and I'm drawing a blank, but everyone who lives in New York can write me emails and tell me what other great breweries there are in New York. But that should be great, and it's not too far for us, so as soon as this thing's up and running, I've been meaning to go check Omegang out myself.
I'd be happy to do it. Yeah, that'd be great. Maybe we can... Maybe we'll snag ourselves a free tour.
Maybe we'll do a sound-seeing tour of the New York Beer Trail. I wonder how long it is. I wonder how many days it would take to complete. I don't know how long the wine trail is. But
should have done your research, Jeff.
I'm sorry. I read the article. It didn't say how long the wine trail is. I guess I could have looked up the wine trail on Google. But that's interesting news. The last thing I'm going to do is a couple events that are happening this weekend. I tried to pick out the biggest ones and the most important. I didn't want to name little beer festivals all over the country. The National Homebrewers Conference starts in Baltimore this week. I almost was going to go down to that.
It sounds like fun.
But I decided to go camping instead because I was very limited on the weeks I could go. So maybe next year I'll check out the National Homebrewers Conference. It was going to be a little expensive, and I wasn't sure what was really involved. Some conference, you know, some keynote speeches and stuff like that. And there was going to be a beer competition, but I didn't know if it was worth me spending the money or not. So if anyone goes to the National Homebrewers Conference and wants to let us know, send us an email, or if you're podcaster, if you're able to record, send us an audio report and we'll mash it into the podcast. The American Beer Fest starts this weekend.
Ah.
Or is this weekend. And that's in Boston.
I've been to, this is from Beer Advocate, right?
Right. BeerAdvocate.com is putting it on.
I went to their Extreme Beer Fest last year and that was a lot of fun.
Tell us a little bit about the Extreme Beer Fest.
Well, what can I tell you about it? I remember a lot, not everything, because there's so many.
Well, tell us the premise behind the Extreme Beer Fest.
Okay, yeah, so let me start over again. The Extreme Beer Fest was interesting because the idea is that they brought in all these breweries, these craft breweries from around the country that had these so-called extreme beers, basically these beers that are not your traditional ales or lagers. They all have something special about them. They're all either brewed, like they're all brewed for higher alcohol, or brewed with fruit in them, or they do something crazy with the malts. They just go, it's the idea is you just go crazy with your beer. You don't do your standard style. So this was the Extreme Beer Fest was all about, and there were a lot of really good beers there, and along with some that weren't that great.
Do you want to explain a little bit how beer festivals have to work in Massachusetts?
This was in Massachusetts. All the Beer Advocate ones are in Massachusetts. Most beer fests you go to, like the ones we go to here in Pennsylvania, you simply pay your fee and you get a glass and go around different tables and just get samples. In Massachusetts, I think there's a law that states that you have to spend money for alcoholic drinks. So you have to buy tickets and it's $1 a ticket, and each ticket you use to fill up your beer. So it ends up costing you a little bit more in the long run to go to these Massachusetts ones, but you're only going to try about 20 beers anyway, you know, over the course of an entire day, unless you're a real, real hardcore drinker.
The next beer event that I have on my list, now, I didn't want to mention a bunch of local ones, I'm sorry, but Pennsylvania has to rank a little bit higher than the rest of the state, since that's where from. Harrisburg Brewers Festival is this weekend. Trogs, I think, is one of the main sponsors.
Really?
And it's a pretty big festival.
I'm going to miss that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm not able to make it either. And also, for our international listeners, the Japan Craft Beer Festival in Tokyo is this weekend.
Really? I'm sure there's going to be a lot of rice malt beers there.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what the craft beer scene is like in Japan, whether it's true craft beer like we're used to here, or if it's a little more like the Japanese lagers that you're used to seeing at the Japanese steakhouses, which are pretty much just macro beers. They don't taste much better. It tastes a little better, but they're nothing that I get excited about.
I wonder if they cover sake at a festival like that. Sake is brewed, you may know. It's brewed like beer. it's not necessarily a beer in the purest sense, but it's brewed much like beer is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But that is what I have for events, and that is the end of the news segment.
Okay, well, we're going to talk right now about Pilsners, the Pilsner style, which is our first lager.
Yes, we're doing a Pilsner tonight. It's a great summer beer. It's a very light-tasting beer. It is our first lager. We've done ales until now. The difference between lagers and ales are the species of yeast that is used.
Okay.
There's a bunch of history behind this. I'll get into just a little bit here, because some of our listeners, turns out they find this stuff's interesting, which makes us happy, because we want to be the informational, educational.
And it makes us happy because it's good stuff. It's fun to talk about.
Back in the day, I don't have dates with me, but this is hundreds of years ago, brewers were making beer. They found that if they fermented the beer in colder caves, the beer had a cleaner taste, less of the fruity phenols and all the flavors that the ale yeast give.
Right.
They didn't know what they were doing with their yeast. They were just doing it in these caves, and they found that it worked better. What it turned out they were doing, where they were isolating strains of yeast that ferment better at lower temperatures.
I see.
And it turns out to be a different species of yeast. This is the lager yeast compared to the ale yeast. And now, lager yeasts, pretty much when they ferment the beer, they just ferment the beer and don't leave any extra flavors that the ale yeast do. You just get what the beer has.
There's top fermenting yeast, which is the ale yeast, and there's the bottom fermenting yeast, which is the lager yeast. And I think that also one of the things they do is they don't leave the beer as cloudy.
Yes, the lagering process helps make a clearer beer. Mm-hmm. So part of the Pilsner is they're a light yellow beer, kind of like what you think of when you think of American macro brews. Typically, they have a lot more flavor.
Right.
The American macro brews are loosely based off of the Pilsner. They've been engineered to have less flavor and be more appealing to the mass market over time, but they were initially based off of a Pilsner style.
What kind of glassware do you recommend for Pilsners?
We're going to use a similar glass to one we used last time. We want a tall, narrow glass, like a flute, Pilsner glass. Also listed on accepted glassware is a mug or a stein. If you're drinking it in a good old hearty German fashion,
sense.
You can shake it around in a mug or stein. We're going to use a flute-shaped glass.
These are nice-looking glasses. I think that the idea is to sort of accentuate the
It's a narrow glass, so it accentuates the clearness,
the clearness,
color,
yeah.
And also it gives it a nice lofty head on it, too.
Thank you for finishing my sentence.
Sure.
Yes.
Hey, Greg was doing a bunch of, like, stretching hand motions, and
forgot we don't do a TV show.
We could. Video blogs is going to be the new big thing.
You know, we may want to try that. In terms of food that goes well with the Pilsners, a lot of food really goes well with Pilsners because they're light. The ones that we're trying, at least, have some flavor to them. They have definite... It's not like the macro beers where it tastes like water.
Yeah, these beers have flavor, but they're still a light-tasting beer.
Right.
And all light foods, like a fish, poultry are good with them. Other German cuisine, you know, like maybe a Hasenpfeffer or something would be an ideal food. I'm not sure. And if we want to pair it up with cheeses, a good peppery cheese, like a Pepper Jack, Monterey type thing.
I could see that.
Because you'll find these beers have a little bit of spicy character to them, and they complement the spicy cheeses pretty nice.
Now, these are German Pilsners we're trying, and there's a Bavarian Pilsner style, and there's German Pilsner style. And what's really the difference there?
Pilsner originally came from the city of Pilsen, which is in present-day
Czech Republic.
And they brewed the first Pilsner because one of the aspects was the amazing soft water they had there. And that, along with some other aspects, allowed them to make a clear, light-colored beer. So that style was born there, and I've read technically Pilsners can only become from Pilsen. That might have been someone like Pilsner Ukraine.
It's kind of like the whole champagne can only come from
the champagne. But the brewery that has ties back to the original Pilsner might have just said that so they can have this little prestige and wear their ascot, because there's great Pilsners that are made in Downingtown, Pennsylvania,
right.
Adamstown, Pennsylvania, and Harrisburg are the three we're trying today.
So, again, the difference between a Czech or Bavarian Pilsner and a German Pilsner?
The differences are that the German Pilsner typically has a coarser taste and is less fruity than their Czech counterparts.
Probably maybe due to the water.
Soft water. Different grains are grown in different regions, so that
right.
might impact it. And they could use different kinds of hops.
I see.
Some of the hops that are typically in Pilsners, I'm going to mutilate some of these names. These are all in the class of noble hops.
Okay.
And I'm sure you've heard of noble hops if you listen to a single Budweiser commercial, because they use the choicest noble hops.
So they claim.
Saaz, Howler Tower, Tettinger, Strang Goldings, Pearl, and Herbusker are some of these hops. And they might use a different combination or a different hop, and that'll change the spiciness a little bit and probably some of the character of the beer.
That definitely makes sense. And these are all the ones that we're trying. These are the Pilsner, the traditional Pilsner, has a strong hoppy component to it, or at least a hoppy flavor to it, whereas the American ones, the macro ones, don't really have much hop character to them at all.
Yes. Two of these Pilsners that we're having today are considered very hoppy Pilsners in these style. And I'm a big hop head, and like we talked about in previous podcasts, so these are some of my favorite Pilsner style beers. They're very enjoyable in the summertime. The Weizens we had last week are both great summertime drinkers.
And these are best served cold.
Yes, pretty cold. We're down another 5 or 10 degrees than we were last week. Serving temp for these would be 40 to 45 degrees. So that's take it out of the fridge and let it sit for 5, maybe 10 minutes, and it's ready to drink. You don't have to let it warm up as much as the other styles.
Sounds good.
Some of the characteristics of these Pilsners, very light straw to golden color, which have a thick, dense head.
Well, I guess we'll look for that.
Okay, we have to go get the beers out of the fridge and let them warm up, so we will be back in just a few minutes. All right, we're back, and we're ready to try the Trogs Sunshine Pils.
Sunshine Pils. This is, like we say, like all of these three, is a German Pilsner. This one's a 5.3% alcohol by volume.
Pour you some, Greg.
Trogs is a brewery located in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. They have an annual production of 6,500 barrels. And the first thing I'm noticing here is a nice, thick head. A couple fingers worth of head here. A very clear straw color. A lot of bubbles.
Let me top you off there.
A lot of bubbles, which is exactly what you want to see in this style.
We have a nice, dense head. Very clear. Even chilled. Sometimes when you refrigerate a beer, it gets a little bit of chill haze. This is probably filtered, so you don't get too much chill haze with filtered beer. But it's a lovely, you got large bubbles floating up through the beer. Looks almost like a champagne.
Yeah, it does. It has a very strong hoppy aroma.
Yes, it's the noble hop type smell, so it's not the same kind of floral that you get out of the other, you know, the
definitely
American West Coast type hops.
It's hoppy with
a little bit of a peppery smell to it, right. A little spiciness to it.
Now, it's very refreshing in terms of taste. It's crisp, I would say. The hop flavor is somewhat strong. It kind of hits you near the end.
Yep, you stole my term exactly. I was going to say this is a crisp one. And it certainly is. I'm trying to figure out another adjective to use instead of crisp, but I'll get back to you in just one second here. It has a nice mouthfeel. It's not a full mouthfeel,
yeah.
But it's not watery. It's not watery, but it's not thick. But it you can feel it in your mouth.
I would say it tastes a little watery at first. The very first hit of your tongue, it tastes a little watery, but then it kind of evens out, and the hop bitterness starts to come in.
I can taste a little bit of what I thought beer used to taste like when I was a little kid drinking grandpa's beer, but it's not overpowering. It doesn't taste bad, but I
know what you mean.
I can tell that this beer has roots.
There's a little bit of that sort of metallic taste. It's the best way I can describe it. I wouldn't say it's bad.
Yeah, it's still enjoyable. I'm just saying that if you drink this in your grandpa's beer, you can tell that they should have similar roots.
Right.
And I hadn't noticed that in the past, but it's very enjoyable. It's much more enjoyable than grandpa's beer.
In Pilsner style, they don't have a lot of malt, but you can definitely taste it here. Particularly, like I say, the hops kind of, you know, hit you at the end, and then it just really kind of finishes malty.
And did you give them the alcohol in this beer?
Yes, 5.3%.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I was busy pouring.
Where can you get this beer?
This beer's from Trogs. They're out of Harrisburg. They distribute to 5 states, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia.
Not exactly the largest distribution in the world.
No, we're sorry. We were trying, when we were picking out the beers for this style, we were hoping to get a Brooklyn Pilsner, which should have a wider distribution area. And I wasn't able, and when I went to the bottle shop, I didn't have Brooklyn. They didn't have any of the Rogue Pilsners. And I wasn't sure, you know, which ones were going to be decent and have a nationwide or most of the nation distribution. So we stuck with 3 Pennsylvania beers. So for you West Coast guys, we're sorry. Next time we're going to pick some breweries that we know you can get. Then we're going to decide which style it's going to be.
That's the idea anyway, but hopefully we can encourage you to try some good pilsners from your area at the very least.
Did you tell them the, some stats on Trogs Brewing?
No, go ahead. Okay. Well, I told them the annual production.
Okay. Their website is trogs.com. That's spelled T-R-O-E-G-S.
Started in 1996. Now, I haven't tried any other Trogs beers. I've seen them, but there's always been another beer that I've taken instead. Have you tried any of these other beers, like their Rugged Trail Ale, for instance?
The four beers that I've listed on the cheat sheet we got here, that Greg mentioned, one of them, are all beers that I've tasted. They have a Rugged Trail Ale, which is the brown ale, I believe. Don't yell at me, Chris Trogner, if you're listening. Yeah. I think that's the brown ale. If it's not, I'm thinking of the brown ale. I enjoyed that one. It was a nice brown ale. It was a typical American brown ale. The Trogonator Doppelbock isn't one of my favorite styles. I think Doppelbocks are just way too sweet, the style themselves. But everyone loves the Trogonator.
Well, I mean, some people really like a sweet beer.
The Mad Elf Barley Wine's really good. I've had that. It's sweet again, but it's a different kind of sweetness. And I dig barley wines. And that's a winter seasonal, and I'm a big fan of the Mad Elf when it comes out.
As this is warming up, I'm noticing that sort of the taste side that I call metallic is probably best that I don't describe it that way, because it's faded out, and it's more malty. Yeah, a little bit more malty, I think.
See, in my last sip, I got a bunch of hops down the sides of my tongue. It was like a full mouthful of hop flavor. And I couldn't taste that metallic you were talking about. It went away. But instead of tasting malt, I tasted a mouthful of hops. The bitter on the sides of your tongue, they kicked in, and like two markers down the side of my tongue, I could taste like two pads of bitterness.
You gotta love a beer that changes as you drink it. I think that's a hallmark of a good beer, is it doesn't taste necessarily the same every single sip.
It's fun. Beer is fun to watch when you drink it. After you pour and you turn your glass back upright, some of the bubbles from the head get swirled down into the beer, and you see them swirl around. It's a very energetic beer, and
definitely don't get a chance to see that with one of the thicker, darker ales we've been drinking.
Got some little bit of lacing on the glasses, which means it has the head that is a little more retentious, and we still have a little bit of head on the beer, but lacing is just a good sign of a resilient head, and also a sign of clean glassware. So I did a good job cleaning these glasses before the tasting.
Excellent job on the dishwasher, Jeff.
These are the glasses that my wife usually drinks her Lindeman's Frumble out of. So one of them she used earlier in the week and didn't rinse the bottom out. So there's a little pink in the bottom. I had to get the glass scrubber out and get that all cleaned out. So
for those who are curious, Lindeman's Frambois is a lambic. It's a raspberry lambic. I think all framboises are raspberry.
Yeah, all framboises are raspberry lambics. Lindeman's is different. Lindeman's adds a whole bunch of raspberries to it. So it tastes almost like a raspberry champagne or almost wine cooler, but it doesn't have that malt liquor like Zima has taste, like most wine coolers.
If you try it, you'll know it's a beer, but you'll also know it's fruity. It's a really good beer. If you find like women who say they dislike beer and won't try beers, I find this is, I don't want to be discriminatory, but this is a great beer to sort of start them on that path.
Well, women who don't like beer, and also men who are confident in their sexuality.
Absolutely.
Who aren't scared to be drinking a pink girly beer.
Because it is definitely a very pink or reddish beer. But, I mean, I've had it, and I've ordered it several times.
Now, don't be fooled. If you order just a framboise, not all framboises are like that.
Oh.
If you get, like, a Cantillon framboise, it's a lambic through and through. You're going to get all these funky, sour tastes from the bacteria and whatnot. And it was a funny story. When we were in New York over Christmas time, I had some training in New York City, and we went searching out good beer bars, and we went to... I forget how to pronounce it. It's a Flemish name. It's Spiting Devil, and it's like Spuiten Duvel or something like that. And they had a couple beers on tap, and they had a huge Belgian cellar. And Heather asked, do you have any framboise? Thinking Lindeman's is framboise.
Sure.
And like, well, we have framboise. And luckily, I asked him, she means Lindeman's, because he would have went down the cellar and opened like a 15-bottle dollar of, rotten raspberry water, Heather would have thought it was. I'm sure it's a brilliant beer. I never had it. I need to try some of these great lambics. But to Heather, they would have tasted like rotten raspberry water, and she would have wasted this money. So luckily, I was on the ball and clarified that, because she just ordered a framboise thinking, it's almost like how people order a beer and expect to get a Bud Light. She ordered a Framboise and expected to get a Lindeman's, and that's just a fraction of the spectrum out there.
But you'll find Lindeman's at places that have a lot of different styles of beer, and like I say, it's a good starter beer, a good way to bring people over into different flavors.
Sure. All right, we finished off the Trogues. It was a very enjoyable beer.
Absolutely, we definitely liked it.
I'm going to have a few more bottles this summer, I'm sure, before it's out of season.
Now we're going to move on to Victory's Prima Pils.
Victory's Prima Pils is a very highly regarded Pilsner. It's won the grand champion in the Pilsner category at the United States Beer Tasting Championships in 2002, 3, and 4. Last year, they were also invited to an invitational in Germany. They're like the only American brewer invited.
Really?
With their Prima Pils. And I believe they placed very well. I don't think they won grand champion or anything, but this is European breweries only. And they were invited and very well received this competition, which I can't recall the name right now.
Sounds good to me. This is, again, another German Pilsner and also 5.3% alcohol. You're not going to notice a lot of alcohol on these, but it's going to be around 5% as a standard for this style of beer. Victory also has somewhat of a small distribution area, but I think they're getting wider.
Here's your glass for it.
Thank you very much. I'm noticing an even thicker head on this one. Not as many excited bubbles, and sort of a paler look to the color, but you can tell this one is unfiltered because it's also hazy.
Yeah, this one has a little bit of haze to it. Let me check the bottle, see if it's bottle condition. Pilsners are almost never... No, this is... This one is filtered. There's no yeast in the bottle. It could be a little bit of that chill haze when the beer's put in the fridge. Excuse me, if you look at a beer at cellar temperature, like a lot of home brews, they're pretty clear. Right. I've had some great clear brews. Put them in the fridge, they cloud right up because of the proteins that are suspended in the beer get hazy when they get chilled.
I see. This head is definitely not going away. It's really nice.
Take the aroma on this beer.
Wow.
It's completely different.
Wow, this is totally different. It's very hoppy. This isn't noble hops, I don't think.
This is. I don't have them here in front of me on my cheat sheet, but they do use
It's a totally different smell. Well, you know what? The more I smell it, I mean, I can see the similarities, but it's much stronger. It's really very pronounced, this hoppy aroma.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have the same hops as an IPA, but you could almost like get the same noseful of hop smell, different kind of hop smell, but from this beer.
And I guess a little bit of a breadiness, a little bit of that smell.
Yes. Yeah, the head on this one is a lot more creamy than the last one. The last one was a full head with large bubbles, but if you look at the top of this one, it's one of those really creamy heads.
Absolutely.
And I have a nice thick head on mine, and it hasn't gone away at all. It's still 2-3 fingers thick. It's a beautiful specimen of a beer. It is a little cloudy, though. That takes away from the Pilsner, because Pilsner is supposed to be clear. But time for my sip. Greg, what do you think about the taste?
Very hoppy. Get a strong hop hit like right up front. And then it's clean. I wouldn't say it's as crisp as a Trogues. It's a little bit, I guess I'd describe it as thicker mouthfeel.
At the beginning of the taste, it does feel thicker. I think it finishes cleaner than the Trogues. It seems like you have a nice mellow finish to it.
Yeah, you're right. It's soft and clean, the finish. And it is different than the Trogues, which sort of ended hoppy and malty.
Yeah, the Trogues had a little bit of bitter, like especially once it warmed up. Let's see how this turns when it warms up. Well, when the Trogues warmed up, the end of every sip, you had some bitterness on the sides of your tongue. This one, as it sits right now, it's really smooth once you get it past the front of your tongue. I've had this many times, and, you know, this is a world-class Pilsner.
This really is something not to miss. If you can find it, you should definitely try it, because this one is excellent.
Trying to find it, I thought Victory had a larger distribution area when I thought we were going to do this, so I'm sorry again for you listeners across the country. On their website, they said they distribute right now in 4 states, Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut, and Oregon. They have under coming soon Indiana, Washington, Wisconsin, Ohio, Virginia, Maryland, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. I think, if I remember reading correctly, they already are available in some of those states. I think I remember people saying they were able to get Trogues in Massachusetts. Victory in Massachusetts. Victory has an annual production of 8,000 barrels a year, so it's a little bit smaller than some of the other breweries that we've been doing. Actually, but it's bigger than the Trogs now that I look back at the Trogs sheet. Every other brewery that we tasted in the previous shows were like 10,000 or more. So 8,000 and 6.5 or 6,500 barrels is, you know, the smallest two breweries we've done so far.
Now they have some other distinguished beers. I think we talked about Hop Devil before.
Yeah, Hop Devil is their claim to fame. It's a hoppy in your face IPA. It's delicious. There's a slogan on it is menacingly delicious. And it's the beer that taught me what hops tasted like.
It definitely, if you don't like hops, you're not going to like it. It has a little bit more malt than some other IPAs, I think. It is balanced very well for as many hops as it, for as much hop character as it has.
When I first got into trying different kinds of craft beer, you know, I was graduating from just stouts and learning to try different kinds. You know, you read about the malt, you read about the hops, and at that point I wasn't really sure what hops tasted like.
Right.
I was trying to figure it out, but all beers, I really wasn't able to pick out the hops. So I was at Mad Mex one day, and I got a six-pack to go, and I was ordering a mix-and-match six-pack.
By the way, Mad Mex is a local chain around here that has Mexican food and also a good selection of beers.
Yes. And I was doing a mix-and-match six-pack, and I was getting a couple stouts, things I was used to, and I, like I said, I really wasn't sure what other beers I liked yet. And I saw Hop Devil, and the name hooked me. I'm like, I need to know what hops taste like. And this thing's going to punch me in the face hoppy, you know? So I got it, and I loved it. I'm like, that's what hops is.
Right.
And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't able to pick it out of other beers. Like, if I had this, even this Victory Pilsner here, which is a very hoppy Pilsner, if I had this before I learned what hops taste like, I don't think I would have been able to really pick it out as
And you
hops.
Probably wouldn't necessarily have liked it so much. I think it's one of those beers where if you don't like hops, or if you don't really appreciate the hop taste, you probably will find it a little too bitter. A little too, you might think it's just off-putting, the kind of flavor there, because it is very pronounced.
So if any of you out there are trying to figure out what hops taste like, there's a lot of other beers. If you can find Hop Devil, it's a great example. If you can find Bell's Two Hearted Ale, that'll teach you what hops taste like.
Dogfish Head 60-Minute IPA.
Yeah, Stone IPA. All those beers will teach you what hops taste like, and you won't have any question how to find hops from that point on.
Right.
You might have to develop your palate to learn what they taste like in some of these other beers. Like the hops in the Hefeweizens we did last week, that's almost non-existent.
Right.
So it's very hard to pick anything out of those. These hoppy pilsners we're doing today, it's pretty easy. But it'll help you learn what hops in stouts taste like, which are very minimal,
mm-hmm.
and other beers like that.
Porters, that sort of thing. They also have Storm King, which is it's a double stout.
It's an imperial stout.
Imperial stout, I'm sorry.
It's a very highly rated beer. All last year on BeerAdvocate.com, that was the number one rated beer. It's dropped a little bit this year. Still a great Imperial Stout. I like the Bell's better. When I'm drinking Imperial Stouts, I want to have that warming flavor from the alcohol.
Right.
Stout, or the Storm King, has a little bit, but not as much as the Expedition.
I see.
It doesn't have less alcohol, I don't think, but it hides it better. But when I'm drinking an Imperial, I want that to be part of the flavor profile.
The Imperial Stouts are around 9% alcohol or higher.
Typically, yeah. Another beer that I really like from Victory is their Grand Cru. Grand Cru is a Belgian term for the best. And typically, Belgian breweries will put out one beer called Grand Cru. And they can be any style. Usually, they're a dark, strong Belgian ale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Victory's is. A couple weeks ago at the Penn Brew Fest, I ordered a Grand Cru from Omegon.
Right? Yeah.
And last five or six Grand Crus I've had have all been strong, dark Belgian ales. Tried the one from Omegang, and it was a lambic. Talk about surprise.
It was very unique.
I take this sip, and it's vinegar, vinegar, vinegar. And I'm like, oh my god, what's wrong with my tongue? And, well, it turns out it's supposed to be a lambic. So Grand Crus aren't always strong, dark Belgians. I had become accustomed to it because, well, everyone that I order down the road is always the same style. The Victory is a very good one. It comes in a 25-ounce corked and caged bottle.
I think we had it before. When we were bottling the raspberry wheat.
You probably have. I have another one in my cellar, too. So we're going to have another one soon. And the last beer that I want to mention from Victory is their Old Horizontal Barley Wine. It is one of my very favorite barley wines. Maybe it's a little hoppier than most. I'm not sure. But it just does it for me. I mm-hmm. just love that barley wine. And we'll be sure to review that one.
And we'll when cover the snow's on the ground. At some point, yeah.
When the snow's on the ground, we'll be doing barley wines.
And let's see if this has changed any now that we've given it some time.
has a little bit more sharpness towards the finish.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
The finish.
I would say it's getting crisper. Yes. The carbonation is going to be becoming a little bit more noticeable near the end. The taste itself isn't changing all that much, but the mouthfeel is changing as it warms up.
Yeah, it tastes a little sharper at the end. Where I said it was really smooth compared to the Trogs, it's not as bitter as the Trogs was towards the finish.
Right.
But it has a little bit of sharpness there.
Oh, no, I'd say that is an excellent beer.
Again, this one's fun to watch after you tilt the glass back upright. All the bubbles start swirling around and just... You know, just got to enjoy all the aspects of the beer.
It goes to show you can be just as entertained by looking at your beer as you can by drinking it.
Yes, it does. Makes us sound like real geeks, but hey, we are the, you know, we're the podcasting beer geeks.
We're the lab coat guys.
Exactly. CSI, as Jeffrey said. Thanks. I think we're doing better this week, having more fun, being less stuffy and analytical. Let us know, you guys. Tell us if
we should put that on the podcast, but we'll see.
Why not?
I don't know. Just, well, you can cut out what I'm saying here, but, we'll let the viewers decide.
Okay. Right.
I'm having more fun.
Yep. Well, if this part stays, let us know if you think we're getting, you know, for more fun this week or if it's
shit.
Screensaver. I beat it. Haha. No ding this time. But, of course, there's all this talking about the screensaver.
Right. Well, there's room for cutting.
Mental note next week. Put my timeout on my screensavers up to 25 or 30 minutes. Or turn it off for the podcast.
Move your mouse every once in a while.
Well, that's what I've been doing. But when you're drinking beer, you forget to move your mouse, you know?
Especially when it's good beer.
Yes. Okay. Greg's finished his Prima Pill, so I need to get this one down so we can move
chug,
on.
Chug, chug, chug.
No. We don't do that here. We don't do that here. We enjoy the beer.
Yeah, that's true.
There was only 1.5 sips left anyway, so.
Hardly a chuck.
All right. Prima Pils.
Prima Pils.
Top-notch beer.
Absolutely. So next we're moving on to Stouts Pils.
Yes, the Stouts Pils. This is in Adamstown, Pennsylvania. So we're doing the Pennsylvania trifecta tonight, and we're sorry for everyone who's elsewhere in the country.
This one, a lower alcohol, 4.7%.
Yes, a little bit lower. This is the one beer tonight that I haven't had yet.
I've not had this either. I've seen it.
Yes, I've seen it. And so this is going to be a real surprise for us.
Yeah. Tonight,
which will be fun. Maybe we'll get to do a negative review on a beer, even though Stouts has done some knock-up stuff lately.
Absolutely.
The other day, I went to the hot dog shop and to pick up these beers, and we had hot dogs there. I tried the Stouts Weizen to go with our Weizens from last week. It's good.
Really?
Maybe not as good as the Penn, but it was still very good. Nice and peppery.
Stouts, we covered when we were doing our double IPA show, we covered Stouts double IPA, and we both liked it. I think we liked it more than the Dogfish Head. Surprised me, because I love Dogfish Head beers.
Okay, this beer is pouring with a mountainous head.
Now that is a huge head. That's about a hand's worth of head there. Another straw-colored beer, very clear. I don't see any of that haziness that I saw with Victories. Again, though, not a lot of bubbles. The head is like Victories in that it's soft, small, creamy, small bubbles and a creamy head. But like I said, this one is very large head, very thick.
Is it bad when you drip beer on your old key? Sticky keyboard now. All for the listeners. So if any of you guys... You know, appreciate what we're doing. Send me a new alt key to put on my keyboard here.
This is...
All right. Now I get to enjoy my beer after I've cleaned up my computer.
Now, the smell is very different. It's light and... There's a slight notice of hops, but it's really... It doesn't have much of a smell to it.
It smells like the Victory, but not nearly as strong.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
It has the same kind of hop smell that the Victory has, but it's not, it's 1/5 as strong, I'd say.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, it has an aftertaste. I shouldn't describe the aftertaste first, but that's what stands out when I drank it. It has this sweetness to it.
It's weird because the first thing that comes to my mind when I started drinking it was peanut butter.
Yes, you're right. Peanut butter. No, hold on a second. Let me take another sip before he... Yeah, the verdict's still out, so let's check.
It's the first thing I taste, and I really get that. I think it's whatever the hops are doing, they're imparting... You know, it gets more floral at the end, but the first bit of it is peanut butter.
Is it peanut butter, or is it the consistent... Does your tongue feel like it's peanut butter? See, because I think I'm getting more of the mouthfeel. Now, obviously, it's not thick as peanut butter, but something on, like, the front of my tongue told me it feels like peanut butter.
Now, I can taste it. I can definitely taste that there. I think that the maltiness and the hops are kind of bringing that flavor out. And like I say, it gets a little more floral at the end.
Okay, let's check our beer tasting and rating sheet. I don't think peanut butter is on here. Well, there's nutty, but it's not the nutty that we're used to. Nutty is a brown ale nutty. We're going to have to write into this company and say, add peanut butter, damn it.
It's something, I mean, it's there. I can definitely taste it. It's a unique taste for a Pilsner.
Yeah, I'm getting a sweetness towards the end that I'm having a harder time placing. But when he said peanut butter, my subconscious was like, damn straight, peanut butter. But I'm not sure if I can analytically say peanut butter.
It gets a little bitter at the end, too. And it fades, and it doesn't fade away like the Victory does. It's hoppy and stronger and stronger.
Yeah, you get a hoppy, bitter aftertaste, even more so than the Trogues.
Right.
It's an enjoyable beer again. If I had to pick out of the three and buying a case of it to drink at a party or something, I'd pick the Victory.
I think I'd go with Victory, too. Let's talk a little bit. We discussed stouts before, so I don't want to go crazy about this. This beer has won several awards at the Great American Beer Fest.
Not lately, though. In 99, they won silver, and they won gold three other times in the 90s, but they haven't won anything since 99. For this beer, or for any of their other beers.
That's interesting.
Now, granted, their Imperial IPA is new. They haven't entered that in competitions that I could find yet.
Okay.
But their other beers haven't won anything since 99. I don't know if they're not entering them, or what. Over the past year and a half, I've become really impressed with stouts. Their first beer I had from them was their American Pale Ale. And I've only had it once. It didn't impress me at all. I should revisit it now that I've really found that they have good beers. But their other beers, their Fat Dog Stout, their Blonde Double Maibock, their Triple, their Imperial IPA, are all really great beers. So I'm going to have to revisit the American Pale Ale. But since I've discovered stouts after the American Pale Ale, really top-notch brewery. I'm impressed. And they're old. They opened in 1988.
Yeah, you know what's funny about this beer, about that peanut butter taste I was telling you about, we discussed the Extreme Beer Fest before. I had a peanut butter porter there I was really looking forward to trying. And I was kind of upset because it really didn't have much of a peanut butter taste. I'm getting more of a peanut butter flavor out of this beer than I was out of the peanut butter porter.
That's funny. You gotta love how beers give you these things, and whether they're actually there or if your brain wants to tell you they're there. But you get all these lovely aromas and flavors from beer, and the only thing in there is barley malt, hops, water, and yeast.
Yep.
It's wonderful. I used to think before I got into all these craft beers, if there's only those four ingredients, how come all beers don't taste the same? There's all kinds of hops, all kinds of yeast, all kinds of barley, different temperatures and darknesses and sweetnesses and bitternesses and...
And frankly, there's all types of ways you can deal with the chemistry of the water itself.
Right. See, do we have anything else here to say about Stouts Brewing Company?
Again, they're at stoutsbeer.com. That's STOUDTS beer.com.
10,000 barrels a year. Adamstown, Pennsylvania. So that's, I heard on one of the other beer podcasts that they were going to the Stouts Invitational Fest, and they said it's a little over an hour outside of Philadelphia. I think last time I said 2 hours. But I didn't drive from Philadelphia. I drove from Pittsburgh. And it's
like, quite a trek.
It's like Pittsburgh. 6 days from Pittsburgh, it seems. I mean, getting on the turnpike sucks. So the Philly guys are lucky to have all these great breweries because Victory is 45 minutes from Philly. Stouts is an hour.
Right.
Trogues is an hour and a half or two. Trogues is 3.5 to 4 hours from here, so in Harrisburg.
Well, that's enough directions for today.
Yes. And if you go north and turn left, you're going to go to the world's biggest ball of
yarn.
Or dingleberry.
Dingleberry. In more Dingleberry news. The last thing we wanted to talk about is how you can help us now.
I've been trying to do a logo, but I can do my own in web design and whatnot, but I'm not a graphic artist. And we're trying to find a craft beer radio logo. And I have a couple ideas, like two hands with a pint glass in one hand and a microphone in the other.
Okay.
Or some kind of pint glass / antenna type picture, like with radio waves coming out of it.
Sounds funky.
But not looking too close, not something that looks exactly like the Podcast Alley logo.
Maybe like a satellite dish filled with beer?
So if any of you guys can draw or graphic artists...
No, we are not artists.
Right. So if you can send us any ideas and wouldn't mind us using your logo on our website and for our other material, like coasters and cards and stuff you might put at local bars and whatnot, send us your art, and we'll give you mad props on the podcast.
Happy to credit you.
And I'll even send you some homebrew if it's legal for me to send it to your state. And if it's not, I'll send you some books. Some books in a box that says books, okay?
And also, of course, please send us mail, give us feedback, any beers you'd like us to cover in the future, any topics you'd like us to talk about.
Sure. Oh, there's one other thing we do need. Notice we haven't had intro music yet.
Right.
I've been playing a little bit with some things, but it hasn't been with PodSafe music, and I don't want to get in trouble with the RIAA or anything. So if any of you are musicians, you can do us a little intro. Now, that's a lot more subjective. You know, we really can't tell you what we like.
Right.
And we'd hate to you put a lot of work into something that, you know, we don't want to use.
Maybe if you can recommend maybe then just some music without rights to it, we can look at that
too. Yeah, I know we could look at GarageBand.com, but I don't know. If any of you guys know anything and how we can get a good intro, you know, probably something, a little rockin', I don't know. I mean, I like Jeffrey from the Good Beer Show's intro. I think that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't do so much voiceover. I wouldn't be looking to do so much voiceover, but I was listening to the Good Beer Show episode today about Schwartz beer, and the intro, I was in the mood to hear it today. I was like, yeah. Yeah. So Jeffrey, if you're listening, we like your intro, and we're trying to find some music. You know all the musicians in Muncie. Maybe someone there can help
maybe
us out.
Maybe you can give us a recommendation. We'd appreciate that.
All right.
Well, that's our show. We hope you enjoyed it. We certainly had a good time. We'll see you again, another episode of Craft Beer Radio.
Yes, we were not going to have one next week since I'm going camping, but the week after, you can expect to find us same place, same time.
Same beer time, same beer channel.
Yep. I think BinRev's going to be calling us and yelling at us for using their slogan now.
Oh, really?
The hacker one, they're like, same hack time, same hack channel.
Right? Well, it came from Batman. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Okay. Dumbass me, didn't know that. Well, this is Jeff.
This is Greg.
And thanks for listening.
Thanks.